For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the LA Local Evening Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back each weekday afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Barcher. Fire crews say they are prepared for brush fires during this wind event, and early voting numbers are high. What does that mean for the campaigns? But first, the Santana winds could cause power outages or preventative power shutoffs. SoCal Edison trying to get the word out to customers. Pete Demetrio reports.
Diane Castro with SCE says in an area ranging from Kern County to the north, San Diego to the south, Indio and San Bernardino to the east, all the way to Malibu in the west, 120,000 plus customers have been warned about the possibility of public service power shutdowns. Castro says it's not just high winds that dictate when a PSPS will happen.
There's a number of factors and conditions before declaring a PSPS, and these factors and conditions include the high winds, the low humidity, the dry vegetation, on-the-ground observations, the fire threat to our infrastructure, and of course, the safety of our public.
Yes, in other words, it's a pretty complex algorithm if you want to look at it. You don't just see the winds at 50 miles an hour and you say, shut it down.
No, we have a fire scientist, we have meteorologists, we have 1,700 cameras, weather equipment, weather stations in the field for real-time reporting. It's not just based on a weather forecast.
SoCal Edison telling people in those areas to have their cell phones charged at all times and also have their trees trimmed back. Fire crews getting a handle on the wildfire that broke out this afternoon in the Hoskin Heights area. It's burned around 5 acres in the hills above Colima Road. LA County Fire has two strike teams pre-positioned in Calabasas and Santa Clarita because of red flag conditions. Department spokesperson Fred Fielding tells us airborne units also available to help.
We have both our Black Hawk helicopters that we own and then the public-private partnership with the Quick Reaction Force that Edison brings to the table. So not only do we have our Blackhawks that can carry 1,000 gallons, but we also have the capacity to ask for the Chinooks. Those can carry up to 3,000 gallons at a time. And the ability to have both of those is really crucial and can get to areas where we can't initially and can stop fire growth before it really gets out of hand and is uncontrollable for us.
That air support used to stop forward progress on the Hacienda Heights fire. Three foster parents in Paris have been sentenced. They pleaded guilty to abusing 9 children, including some of the Turpin children who had been put into their care. After having been tortured by the parents for years, kept restrained, forced to live on peanut butter sandwiches and burritos, only allowed to shower once a year. After they were rescued in 2018, they were sent to live with the Olguins. Marcelino Olguin got 7 years in state prison. He pleaded guilty to lewd acts on a child, child endangerment, and false imprisonment. He's accused of forcing kisses on some of the girls, making the children sit outside alone for hours at a time, forcing them to eat until they threw up. His wife and daughter were sentenced to 4 years of probation. Now, the Turpin children are suing the county and the placement agency for putting them in the Olguin's foster home. Three teenagers facing murder and other felony charges. They're accused of a follow-home robbery in West L.A. that left one man dead, another in critical condition from a gunshot wound to the head. And three young men are from Oakland. Last week, four of them confronted a couple in their driveway. They demanded their property. One of them allegedly shot the man in the head, and he is now in critical condition. One of the robbers was also shot. He died later at the hospital. No information has been released yet about how he got shot. Investigators are interviewing people to find out how and why a 7-year-old boy was shot to death inside a home in Lancaster. This happened yesterday on Dahlia Street. LA County Sheriff's Lieutenant Steve DeJong says it is not clear how many times a boy was shot or who pulled the trigger.
We'll have to wait till the coroner's report from the autopsy. That has not been conducted at this time, but he did have what appeared to be at least one gunshot wound.
The boy was a guest at the home visiting a friend. He died there after deputies and firefighters tried to save him. No one has been arrested. An audit of a state program found that it spends over $1.5 million per violent sexual predator. It paid a single vendor about $93 million to oversee the release of 56 sexually violent predators. Those are individuals who are convicted of violent sexual crimes and also have mental health conditions. When their prison terms end, a judge can commit them to a state hospital, release them, or direct them into the state's conditional release program. Now, the state contracts Liberty Healthcare to find housing, treat mental health, and supervise participants. The goal is to release predators into communities and prevent reoffending. The audit found the program reduces reoffense rates, but it does come at a very high price tag. Just not meant to be for the Dodgers today. They are still, though, one win away from making it to the World Series. That's coming up as Nonstop News at 5 continues. Presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text LEMON to 40333 for a free case review.
Campaign 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Well, it is a bit of a landmark reached today. More than 1 million people in California have now voted early in the presidential election. That is 5% of registered voters. And joining us now live for more is USC political analyst and polling expert Christian Gross. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What do you make of this early voting figure? Is it higher at this point than previous elections or about the same?
These are pretty good numbers. If I recall, it's pretty similar to what we saw in 2020, but it is showing that a lot of people are already taking part. Having 5% of the electorate turning out with just the first few days is pretty good.
Places like Georgia and even North Carolina are still recuperating from hurricane damage or reporting record early voting, which is interesting for these swing states, used to be red states. Does that point to high turnout? And which candidate does a high turnout benefit?
That does point to high turnout in the swing states. So just in North Carolina, for example, early voting started yesterday. And they've already reached nearly 500,000 voters in a, you know, state that's relatively middle size and population. It seems to benefit the Democrats would be my guess. If you look at the early voting in North Carolina, there's slightly more women voting this time than we saw in 2020 at this point. There's slightly more Black voters voting than we've seen at this point in 2020. And there's actually about 2 percentage points more Democrats who voted than Republicans. However, there are a lot of Democrats and Republicans voting. So it's a swing state. And same thing in Georgia, the turnout numbers are really high. So I would say that's probably a slight edge to the Democrats. But on the other hand, it also means Democrats and Republicans are really engaged.
Does a higher early voting turnout, does that come at the expense of people voting on election day? Or do you think that we're also going to see some record voting turnout on the day itself?
High early voting and high mail-in voting, like we've seen in California, usually does take away from election day voting. So it means people like to go out and they like to bank their votes. They like to just get it done. So it's often associated with a little bit less on election day than we used to have. You know, now having said that, early voting and election day voting together usually leads to much higher turnout than if you would just have election day voting. So I think that the fact we're seeing really early really high numbers in early voting does show that the overall turnout in this election is going to be through the roof. Potentially, you know, 2020 numbers are higher.
Now, let's talk about polls. The polls show that this White House race is very close, too close to call. Is this really a close election, or is early voting telling us something different than what the polling might be showing us?
I do think the early voting starting to show us something a little different than the polling, but pardon the pun, it is a little too early to count on the early votes yet to be telling us what's going to happen. I do think that the polling is showing it's basically a tie. There are a lot of polls came out a few days ago that had Trump ahead by a point or two within the margin of error nationally. Several polls that came out in the last couple of days has Harris up 3 points, 2 points, 4 points nationally. They're basically tied in the swing states. I do think the next week or so of early voting and the states that have mail-in ballots and significant numbers among the swing states is going to give us some more clues. The polls are going to get a little bit more precise because people will ask, have you already voted or do you plan to vote? in the surveys. And when the people say they've already voted early, those are the kind of votes that you can count on more.
And that does kind of bring up one of the dirty little secrets about polling. I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but it comes between registered voters and likely voters. And then, of course, later you're asking if you've already voted. But likely voters, the pollsters can define likely voters however they want to. And the pollsters all have different definitions for who's a likely voter. And that affects the poll's outcome, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. When we do polls, we really want to figure out who are the most likely voters. And so if you do a poll 2 months out from election day before any early voting has happened, you have to make some assumptions about what the electorate's going to look like. You have to guess that if people say they're likely to vote, they really will. But the nice thing about doing polling now, ask people, have you voted or are you likely to vote? And then people say they've already voted. You know that those are votes that are going for the candidate that they say. And then the likely voter model is a little easier to project compared to when you do a poll before early voting starts.
All right, USC political analyst, polling expert Christian Gross, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up on Nonstop News at 5, the Dodgers. We're going to talk about the Dodgers. They are still one game away from going to the World Series.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It was not meant to be for the Dodgers today. However, they are still a win away from the World Series. Hope springs eternal. But today, losing 12-6 to the Mets in New York. Natalie Davidian has been watching the game with some fans in Echo Park. She joins us live.
Hey, Rob, it was a make game, but it was not a break game. So that's the good news here. The boys in blue, of course, losing game 5 today. But fans are still holding on to hope that they will take it to the World Series.
Well, I hung around here just to see this thing, so we're definitely going to do this right now. Let's go ahead and take care of this now. Not at all. The parade in L.A.? Oh, man. It's been a while. Again, since COVID, we weren't able to do that. So we're talking 1988. And you watch all these other baseball fans get to celebrate with their teams and in their cities and stuff. We haven't gotten to do that with our Dodgers. This is going to be really, really big for the city and the Dodger organization.
They deserve that love from their home.
Absolutely.
So, Rob, again, the Dodgers will host Game 6 here at home on Sunday.
All right, Natalie, thanks so much. Group of mothers holding a rally outside Children's Hospital Los Angeles, calling attention to what they say is substandard care for children. Larry Perel has more.
At least 3 mothers claim their children were subjected to unsafe care, resulting in death. Christine Bilderain is one of those mothers. She says the hospital had been delivering unsafe care for children, and it was only after LA County Department of Public Health Director Dr. Barbara Ferreira agreed to look into the claims that she says they were confirmed.
My son was being dialyzed with machines that were not properly sanitized, and that's why he was getting sick as well as the other patients. And my son died of sepsis because he had an infection that he got in that unit.
But Bilderain says in the end, it wasn't those claims as to why her son was patient dumped by the hospital to USC.
I had seen a male staff member of the dialysis unit sexually assault a female patient, and I brought it to their attention promptly, and they decided not to do anything about it.
She says after she pressed the facility on what she alleges she saw, they got rid of her son and her without explanation. She says her son died at SC because the facility didn't have the proper equipment and staff to care for him. I'm Larry Perel, KNX News 97.1 FM.
Children's Hospital LA has sent us a statement, says they can't comment on individual cases because of privacy law. The statement also notes that, quote, the largest provider of pediatric medical care in Los Angeles County and treats some of the most rare and complex injuries and illnesses. That's Children's Hospital LA in the statement they provided to us. Bloomberg's Nancy Lyons, look at your money.
The S&P is on its longest winning streak of the year, reaching another record, up 23.4%. The Dow also set a record, up 37.1%. The Nasdaq added 116.6%. are seeing more fallout from the strike at Boeing. The company's biggest supplier of aircraft components, Spirit AeroSystems, says it will temporarily furlough 700 employees later this month due to a slowdown of work. Apple has at times struggled to gain traction in China, but its iPhone 16 sales are soaring there. Counterpoint research data shows sales of Apple's newest phones are up 20% in the first 3 months of their debut in China compared with last year's model. Top leaders of the Girl Scouts of the USA are urging members of its National Council to approve a dramatic increase in annual membership dues from $25 to $85. A special meeting will be held tomorrow to discuss the plan. I'm Bloomberg's Nancy Lyons, KNX News 97.1 FM.
And that's your nonstop news at 5 for Friday, October 18th, presented by My Lemon Law Lawyer. Text LEMON to 40333 for a free case review.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.